Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Cesano. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ETHub weekly recap. On these episodes, we discuss the ETHub weekly newsletter, which covers the latest news from the Ethereum ecosystem and crypto space as a whole. This week, we're discussing the news from February 25th to March 3rd. Hey, Anthony, want to walk us through the newsletter?
Hey, Eric. Sure. So this week, Constantinople finally went live. Yay! Third attempt, third time lucky, right? You know, in classic Ethereum hard fork fashion, when it actually succeeds, it's, you know, kind of a non-event, doesn't really cause much drama. I think, you know, all the drama was contained when the attempts failed. But, you know, the upgrade went through successfully. We had our four EIPs included, the fifth one, the vulnerable fifth one, obviously not included. And the much anticipated issuance reduction was included, which is kind of funny because the issuance rate for Ethereum was basically on par of what it was with Constantinople because of the difficulty bomb slowing down the block times. So that was pretty funny, but it's good that we're now having two ETH per block instead of three ETH per block. So the issuance is down to what we said it was going to be, or what the network, you know, what the community wanted it to be. And you were mentioning the other day a little bit about how the blocks are quite fast at the moment. I think they were about 12 to 13 seconds when they're usually around 15 seconds, which means the issuance is actually slightly more than was projected, which is quite funny. But I think that will normalize over time. And, you know, issuance fluctuates all the time, especially with uncle blocks too. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out as, you know, Constantinople continues its life until we get the next hard fork in. I think it's scheduled for another nine months from now or something, or October I've seen thrown around or something like that. I'm sure we're being optimistic here. It might get delayed for some reason or another. But it was great to see it go live finally.
Yeah, that's the first fork we've had in 18 months. So it was nice to watch the blocks tick down and be excited about something. And like you said, after a pass, it was kind of like, oh, yay, it happened. And the funniest part was issuance was just flat. It seems like because of the fluctuations we've had in difficulty and mixed with the hash rate kind of falling and then dipping back, going back up and dipping back down and kind of being a roller coaster, those two factors have kind of created 13 second block times, which are the fastest we've ever seen. But yeah, issuance seems to have kind of set in around like 4.3 to 4.5% on any given day. But nice to see kind of a win on the upgrade side.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny. The issuance is currently just above what Bitcoin's at. I think Bitcoin is like 3.7% or something. I'm wondering if we're going to see another issuance reduction before Bitcoin's halving, which is due from May of next year. I think it depends on the price of Ether, of course. As the price rises, we don't need to be paying as much to miners to secure the network. But then we also have to consider the Beacon Chain is probably going live this year as well. So we're going to have the Beacon Chain issuing new Ether, you know, ETH 2.0 Ether, or BETH as some people refer to it, which will bump the issuance up a little bit as well. But then there's talk around using ETH 2.0 to finalize the ETH 1.0 chain, which means we can actually reduce block rewards down to less than one ETH per block. I think much less than one ETH per block from calculations that I've seen, even at current prices, which would be very good. So the issuance should continue its downward, you know, trend from here. It shouldn't uptick again. Maybe we'll see a bit of fluctuations, you know, to the higher side during the transition or during the kind of early days of ETH 1.0 and 2.0 existing. But yeah, definitely people should expect the issuance to keep going down, and not just the issuance at the protocol level, but also, you know, ETH locked up in staking and ETH locked up in various DeFi apps as well. So good to keep an eye on that one. The next thing I mentioned just before we get into the news was the bounties that we want to post for ETHub content. So those should be coming out in the next 2 to 3 days. We've been teasing this for quite a while, but we've been pretty busy over the past month with just personal stuff. So we really want to get these out there. So these bounties will be for various content around Ethereum. We do want to flesh out the ETH 2.0 and ETH 1.x pages a lot more. So you will see bounties for those come first. So it's a good way for you to get involved and earn some money as well. So the money for these will will be coming out of our donations that we generously received from the community, as we stated in our funding blog post that we posted a while ago. So definitely keep an eye on the ETH Hub Twitter account, where we'll be announcing the bounties and the links to them, so you can get involved that way. And there was one last thing I wanted to talk about, the Gitcoin Torch. So this was something that was actually formally announced today, but it wasn't included in the newsletter because it was announced today. So I'll include it next week. But the blog post is available on the Gitcoin Twitter. But I'll let you walk us through exactly what this is and what it's going to be going forward, Eric.
Yeah, so we talk about Gitcoin grants a lot, and I think we talked about the Torch last week as well. But basically, you know, Gitcoin went through a CLR matching program, they called it, a few weeks back, which ETHUB luckily was included in, and we got a lot of generous matching and donations from that. So basically, the Torch was just kind of some random tweet I put out. I didn't expect it to turn into anything, and I just said, hey, I'll match up to 1,000 DAI donations, and people started joining me and ended up talking to the Gitcoin team, and we turned it into a thing called the Gitcoin Torch. So now you can go read the blog post, but basically this is going to be the community matching effort for their next like overall matching that's going to happen. I believe they're going to have some announcements at ECC in Paris, which is happening this week, or when this podcast goes out, it'll be happening that day. But if you're interested in, you know, contributing to growing the open source ecosystem on Ethereum, go check out this blog post. You can donate and pledge to match. And if you match a certain amount, I believe it's 1,000 DAI at this point, you get a really cool NFT badge, which is called Kudos on Gitcoin, that you can hold on to for a while. But it's a cool effort, and I'm glad to see it took off.
It was really awesome watching this unfold on Twitter. I was in New Zealand for the last 2 weeks, so unfortunately I couldn't get involved myself, but it was awesome watching everyone jump on board and seeing you lead this initiative. So definitely encourage people to get involved with that. If you've got some spare DAI lying around, or if you want to fund the future, you know, of Ethereum or projects building on Ethereum, definitely get involved with that. And you can always contribute to the grants directly on Gitcoin Grants as well. Awesome. So I want to move on to the news now. So the news this week, there's a couple of notable things. The Facebook coin. So we've heard a lot about this. This was announced formally, I think, a couple of weeks ago. Now this week it's come out that Facebook is already talking to exchanges about listing their coin. So it seems that this is a lot closer than we think. It might actually be released within, I think, estimates I saw the first half of this year, but towards the end of the first half of this year, which is really surprising considering it was only announced a little while ago. And I'm curious as to where this lives. Does it live on the public Ethereum chain? Is it some kind of private implementation, which would be weird if they were to list on public, crypto exchanges? Because currently the public Ethereum chain would not be able to handle Facebook's user load if they onboard Facebook users into this straight away. So they roll it out on something like Messenger. They have billions of users on there. So I don't understand, how they're going to be able to use the public Ethereum chain for this sort of stuff. It would definitely overload the chain. It would cost them a lot of money in gas fees if they're paying the fees for the users. Or if the users are paying the fees themselves, then they're not going to, it'll just clog the network. So I'm curious to see if they're just going to use a private implementation and then bridge to public Ethereum. But it's still so immature that we don't have the tech for that yet. And as I said, scalability is still a huge issue. So I'm curious to see what happens with Facebook coin and whether they're listing on a crypto exchange is just for trading on the exchange itself or to get more liquidity through and not to actually withdraw off the exchange to a public wallet or something like that. So yeah, I'm keeping an eye on this, that's for sure.
Yeah, this is confusing. I mean, details have been scarce other than that they've been ramping up hiring for a while. It's interesting that they're talking, or there was at least news about them talking to exchanges, because the rumor for a little while was it was going to be a stable coin, right? Kind of like JPM coin. In doing that, they would probably be able to do it on like a public or a private implementation of Ethereum, like Quorum that JPM is doing, and then maybe just interact with the public chain where need be, maybe like cross institution or wherever it might be. I'm not really sure not too excited, no matter how you cut it, as far as it goes when it comes to something like Facebook creating a crypto. I don't have very high hopes. But, in general, we're seeing larger institutions become curious about cryptocurrency. And in the long run, that can really only be bullish for people that are into crypto, because it's just going to drive mass adoption. Sure, maybe Facebook's going to come out with some shitty, you know, I guess I'll say it, EOS type coin, where Zuckerberg and Google execs and Apple execs, or maybe the VPs, and they're creating some Silicon Valley network of block producers. I don't know. Who knows what this is going to be? But in my ideal case, I guess it would be some private implementation of Ethereum, a lot like JPM, and then they find ways to interop with the public chain. You know, on the JP Morgan front, it looks like they're exploring some privacy technology and ZK Stark. So it seems obvious to me in the future, if you read kind of JP Morgan's Investor Day slides and kind of where they're going, that they're interested in interoperating with the main chain. So there's a little bit more information there than on the Facebook side, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I definitely expect Facebook to interoperate with whatever network they're building, you know, this token on. They haven't actually announced the network that they're building it on. We, of course, assume Ethereum because it's the biggest network. It has the most, you know, network effects, most people already on it. But we have seen stablecoins, you know, deployed to other chains. So Tether being a famous example, deployed to Omni, which is built on Bitcoin. But that in itself comes with a host of its own problems, and I don't think they would build on that. I think we've seen Stellar as well. Have stablecoins built on it. These other chains that, you know, maybe more centralized but have more scale because of that. You know, the nightmare scenario is if Facebook announces that this is being built on EOS, or God, you know, God forbid, Tron. So it's just, I'm just very curious how they're going to tackle this current scalability issues with Ethereum, and whether they just roll this out to a small group of users and use, as you said, a private implementation of Ethereum for the time being. But for me, that kind of breaks down when I start to think about them listing on public crypto exchanges. You know, as I mentioned before, maybe they'll list on there and just not, you know, the exchanges won't allow withdrawals to the public chain because it won't be in the model of what Facebook's trying to do. It just, there's so many unanswered questions, and I'm hoping we get more data about this, because as much as, you know, Facebook hasn't got the best reputation, and, you know, we don't really want these big companies making these centralized cryptos and trying to sell them as, you know, the same thing as, you know, Ether or Bitcoin. I still think they're going to play a very important part in the ecosystem. They're going to, like we discussed this with the JPM coin, they're going to bring more awareness to crypto in general. And it seems like they're kind of trying to disrupt themselves before they get disrupted as well, which is really curious to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you kind of ask yourself, like, why do these companies need crypto? I mean, in the JP Morgan case, to me, it's obvious, right? We talk about open finance all the time. Like, that's just where the technology is going to move. When you think about Facebook, you know, I've seen some interesting theories here around, I mean, where they're getting crushed right now is around privacy and data. I've seen some interesting theories. I guess I'll shout out our buddy CRN on Twitter. I believe he's now CRN_maximizer. But he's talked a lot. He thinks this Facebook coin is going to be around data, right? And maybe encrypting it and just whatever it might be. But, you know, if you think about why does Facebook need crypto, like it really doesn't, right? Like, I don't really see them shoehorning in some Facebook coin that's unnecessary, right? Like, their stock's worth a lot. They're a pretty profitable company and they're doing well. So, you know, it'll probably end up being what they think is a benefit to them. So it'll just be really interesting to watch this play out.
It's interesting you mentioned why they would want to build something like this. Zuckerberg has historically been quite brutal in his takedowns of other companies. So, you know, just to give some context around that, Facebook always tries to buy the next hot thing or up and coming, especially in the social space. So, you know, a perfect example is when Facebook tried to buy Snapchat. I think it was like $6 billion or something. And you know, the company turned them down and went ahead and IPO'd themselves. And now I think Snapchat stock is kind of dead or quite, you know, dumped quite a bit since their IPO. And that's because Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, you know, launched a competing feature called Instagram Stories, which was basically Snapchat. So as like, there's plenty of instances and examples of Zuckerberg being really ruthless around competition. So maybe he's trying to get ahead, as I said, disrupt himself or disrupt, you know, Facebook before they get disrupted, or just simply use it as like a payment rail or, you know, something that the users can use to send money to each other in a different way. I doubt they're actually going to advertise this as a cryptocurrency or something or anything blockchain related. I think they're just going to advertise this as Facebook coin, and that'll take on a life of its own and a brand of its own, basically, given how diverse Facebook's users are as well. They have users from, you know, 13 years old to 100 years old and or more. from all walks of life. I mean, they've got, 2 billion unique users, according to them, which is pretty much the entire population of the internet or that has access to the internet, right? Or most of it. I think, obviously China has their own version of Facebook, which cuts out over 1 billion people, of course. But yeah, so I'm very interested to see, and just, looking at the historical moves that Facebook has made with regards to different tech and emerging tech and, acquisitions and things like that, I think that they're just trying to get involved with this before it gets, bigger, just so they can get ahead of it before another company comes along and takes market share from them, basically. So the next bit of news I wanted to talk about was the Coinbase movement. So the delete Coinbase movement that happened over the past week. Now, this movement was spawned out of Coinbase's acquisition of a, I think it was like a KYC kind of blockchain analytical company called Neutrino. So this company has ties to another company called Hacking Team. So Hacking Team was basically, or as the name implies, a group of hackers that were doing work for, less than ideal governments such as Russia, I think some of the Middle Eastern ones, some sanctioned countries and things like that. I don't know. There was a whole thing about this Hacking Team and all the bad deeds that they did and all the things that they were a part of. So the Delete Coinbase movement was spawned out of this, led primarily by Bitcoiners saying that, this is ridiculous. You've hired these, unethical people. These people have done illegal things in the past. What are you doing and all this stuff. And then, it actually happened today. This wasn't included in the newsletter because it only happened a few hours ago, but Hacking Team, the people that were part of Neutrino, that were also part of Hacking Team have actually been fired, which is, it's quite amazing to see the turnaround of this, because this was literally just a Twitter social movement from, a lot of prominent people and a lot of smaller people as well. But this resulted in, that people losing their jobs, basically, because I think Brian argued in his blog post, Brian Armstrong, the CEO of Coinbase, argued in his blog post that it was not aligned with crypto's vision and with, Bitcoin's vision of, freedom, privacy, things like that. So it's really interesting to see the power of social media, especially in a space as nascent as crypto. This was only, from what I saw, there it was mainly the Bitcoiners that were doing this. I didn't see the wider crypto community participating in this. Yeah, very interesting decision. And, kudos to Coinbase and kudos to Brian for doing this. But, some people are saying that it's just a PR thing. They don't actually believe in what they're doing. But, it's impossible to prove that. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, Eric.
Yeah, I guess first I thought all the Bitcoiners deleted Coinbase already whenever they listed Bitcoin Cash. So I guess they all sneakily reinstalled it and deleted it again. But I don't know. I usually stay away from these social movements, but it did seem like a bit of a shady acquisition by Coinbase. And obviously this team had, been kind of installing spyware and I think was helping some shady government actions in Saudi Arabia and Russia. So it definitely seemed questionable. So I guess I'm glad they ended up firing the team. But, at this point, maybe I'm going to start my own social movement around delete Coinbase for listing XRP, because I think that's the bigger crime here.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing. I didn't include it in the newsletter. I didn't think it was relevant to our readers, but yeah, they did list XRP this week as well. And I think Brian only did it because he was sick of getting XRP army in his mentions saying, "When XRP, I'm never using your service again unless you list XRP." And they listed it, and I think XRP pumped about 10%, which is kind of nothing in crypto, obviously. So, and then it's just been a nothing event. It's obvious why Coinbase did it, because revenue, they're a business, whatever, I understand, but still not a great look that they're listing something that is extremely questionable to anyone with a brain in the space, basically. So I fully expect them to keep listing these sorts of tokens. I actually personally think Tron is worse than XRP in terms of just, for a whole bunch of reasons. I'm curious now to see if Coinbase lists Tron. I expect them to list something like EOS, as much as we, bash EOS on the podcast and on Twitter, of course. I do fully expect them to list that and list, hundreds and thousands of other tokens and coins, because that's what Coinbase's president has said in the past. It didn't really come as a surprise to me that they listed it, but I hope Brian is no longer, pestered by the XRP community on Twitter and can actually use it like a normal person.
Yeah, I mean, I like Coinbase. I've always used them for years, and I have no complaints about their service. I, you know, if they're gonna, they need to at least take this listing framework offline, right, and kind of get off their high horse with being, you know, the standout exchange as far as the listing goes. Because, in all honesty, we can just throw that out the window at this point. I mean, I get that they want to make more revenue and fees, and they're eventually probably going to IPO someday, and they've got, you know, VCs behind them pushing them to boost that bottom line. So, you know, I can't blame them for it. But at the same time, let's not act like, you know, they have some fancy framework they go through and somehow XRP made it through that.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we'll just throw the framework into a fire and let it burn. Like, there's no way they're following that anymore. I think we discussed this a few weeks ago on the podcast. It's completely gone. There is literally, I mean, XRP, I when that framework first came out, I actually compared a few tokens to it myself, one of those being XRP. And I just laughed because I'm like, XRP match, you know, maybe hit a few of them and a few of the really easy metrics on that that listing framework, but it pretty much failed across the board. So obviously they've thrown that out, and now it's just I think a bear market plays a big part in this. I think it's, you know, just a business decision because the trading volumes for XRP are actually quite high. So they want a piece of that, of course, and I can't blame them, you know, in that regard, but it's unfortunately not a great look for the space or for a lot of the hardcore crypto people. But, you know, in general, I think Coinbase is a retail, you know, kind of noob focused exchange, where they onboard a lot of new people into crypto who don't actually have any idea what XRP is or the, you know, the shady history behind it. So, you know, it is what it is at the end of the day. And I don't think we, you know, we should go on too much more about it, basically.
Yeah. I mean, the second they listed Ether Classic, you knew the listings were going downhill. So I'm not surprised. And now I'm going to get a lot of people tweeting me to say, be nice to Ether Classic, because people love doing that.
Yeah, proof of kumbaya, as I say sometimes. Cool. So on to the project updates for this week. So Set protocol is basically a protocol for bundling assets together and trading them as kind of a set, if you will. They announced this week basically their Set or strategy enabled tokens. So this was really cool because this enables things like automatic trading. So you can set up your token to say, or your trading to say, if the price goes here, buy the dip, or, you know, some other trading strategy. But I think you were looking into this a bit more, Eric, if you wanted to cover this a bit more in detail.
Yeah, I've been a fan of Set for a while. They don't get as much publicity for whatever reason as some of the other open finance, and I'm not going to say DoteFi, and we're going to talk about DoteFi later, but I'm staying away from DoteFi. I want to kill that movement. But open finance, and for short, we can use DeFi. But they're really cool. I mean, they kind of started with, you basically could basket a bunch of different tokens. So say you wanted to, you know, buy up all the stable ERC-20 stable coins, right? So USDC, DAI, and in doing that, you would just make an even more stable coin. You can basket all those ERC-20s into a single ERC-20, which is called like the stable set, they call it. And you can just buy that coin. So you can like basket a bunch of ERC-20s, which is really, really cool. That's how they started. And now they have these even fancier, they're single ERC-20s, but yeah, you can automate basically portfolio strategies inside your ERC-20. So you can kind of say, like you mentioned, you know, if price falls below this, then buy the dip, or, you know, this is going to open up so many things. We were talking about that ETH this then that the other day. If you think about like combining that with this technology, I mean, you could literally have an ERC-20 token that like triggers at a certain point and then opens a CDP and like market buys ETH. Like, there's so many cool possibilities being opened up here. I mean, the open finance space is just growing so rapidly. And, you know, some of these projects aren't being talked about so much, but I think something like Set is, once people realize the possibilities here, it's going to open up just so much activity for them.
Yeah, it's cool that you mentioned that, you know, you can create a set of tokens, because I actually mentioned this on Twitter a little while back about how you could create, for example, and this is probably far into the future, but it's really fun to think about, you could create like a basket of alternative assets. So alternative being maybe, you know, some NFTs, maybe some Gods Unchained cards. And this was actually around the time that the Reddit Donuts thing was happening. So you could create, you know, this basket of Gods Unchained cards, maybe the Donuts from Reddit, of course, and a couple of other tokens or whatever. And, you know, when multilateral DAI is introduced on Maker, maybe we could have a, you know, a CDP collateral type be that basket of alternative assets. So you could actually open a CDP and collateralize it with a basket of alternative assets, you know, which is just mind-blowing. Like, there's so much interoperability here for these sorts of things. It's just another tool in the, you know, DeFi, open finance, whatever tool set that allows us to do all this really cool stuff. And as you're saying, it triggers different events. So, you know, the set blog post goes through a really cool condition that says, if the price of ETH goes above $1,000, then sell everything into 100% DAI. So this is what you can do with these kind of set tokens, these strategy enabled tokens. And there's, you know, there's a bunch more in there, a few more examples in there as well. But I highly suggest everyone to go read the blog post, which is linked in the newsletter, and definitely follow the SET project as they're, I mean, as you said, they don't get as much attention. I think that's just because they've been quiet lately. I'm hoping that this is, you know, their first kind of post in a series where they start ramping up maybe marketing and trying to get themselves out there more, because I think this is a very important component to the DeFi space.
Yeah, definitely. I've actually had this idea for years around how someday you're going to be able to invest in other people's investing strategies. So like, if you want to follow someone's like trading, right, and you can almost buy into their strategy, like to get access to it. And I think these, if you really kind of step back and think about what these tokens enable, it kind of enables that, right? Like, if you start following someone else's strategy through an ERC-20 token, you can start to like buy their strategy, right? And maybe if you're a really good trader that's doing well, you can kind of start to market your ERC-20s that you've created and your trading strategies there. Like, it's maybe not fully there yet, but like that idea is starting to come to fruition.
Yeah, it's just all building blocks at the end of the day, and we're still extremely early, and it's just really cool to see all this evolve and, you know, get people to play with it basically, because at the moment it's just a bunch of enthusiasts. It's going to grow into something more, but we need that testing and that, you know, playing around with these things and seeing what fits and what works before we try to onboard new users basically. So on to the next one. It's about the 0x governance vote that happened this week. Now, I know on-chain governance is your favorite topic, Eric, and you love on-chain governance and think it's the best thing since sliced bread. So this actually, I'll just recap what happened this week. So ZEIP-23 was a improvement proposal for the 0x project that was going to enable the trading of arbitrary bundles of assets. So this was the kind of first, I think, governance vote that 0x has had using the 0x tokens for a new feature. So as people might know, the 0x token has two core functions. One is to pay fees with it on different decentralized exchanges, which historically has not been happening at all. It's pretty much zero. And the other use is decentralized governance. So governing what happens on, you know, to the protocol, what goes into the protocol, what goes out, what gets modified, all that sort of stuff. Unfortunately, this vote, like, it went ahead, everything was cool, it went smoothly, they, you know, people voted, whatever, but unfortunately the voter turnout was extremely small. So this is a very big issue with on-chain governance, and something that I see as a very big barrier to these on-chain governance systems working correctly. You definitely need to incentivize people to do this in some way. I don't think 0x really incentivizes people to do this at all at the moment. So I'll just go through what happened. People voted. 5 million tokens voted out of the 1 billion supply from 300 unique Ethereum addresses. Now, this voter turnout was very low. That 5 million out of a billion is 0.5%. Circulating supply is like, I think, 60% of the 1 billion. So you could say around 1% of turnout with tokens, which was quite damning, if I do say so myself, considering that the governance aspect of the 0x token is a core component of it. It's just really, I mean, we've seen this across the board. Like, these governance, even with something like Maker, where the Maker token is supposed to be used for governance as well, and it's actually like, that's one of its, I think that's its main role. Like, yeah, it is. It's its main role. There's no other huge role to it. The governance is for Maker is extremely important, and the Maker token holders, you know, have sway over that. I think the turnout's like 10%. So it's a lot better, but not something we want. I'd like to see more than 50%. You know, participation in these sorts of things, but it obviously paints a picture that these tokens are just held by speculators. They're mostly held on exchanges. People just hold them till they appreciate whatever, blah, blah, blah. They don't actually use them for their intended purpose. So I'll let you talk to a bit more about this, Eric, because I know you love on-chain governance.
Oh yeah, big fan. The first thing, if someone tells me about a new project or something I haven't heard of, the first question I ask is, does it have on-chain governance? And if they say yes, it's immediately a don't pass or pass go, go immediately to jail and don't collect $200. I mean, I'm just not a fan. Like I heard something good the other day. It was from a buddy of mine. He goes by Panic on Twitter. I'm sure a lot of people have seen him. And it's like, don't create on-chain governance yet for things that aren't worth governing. Like this just isn't worth governing, right? Like we're voting to enable arbitrary bundles of assets on 0x, which is really cool. Don't get me wrong. Like this is really neat technology. But like who would vote no on this, right? And that's the problem that I have with a lot of this is like the founders, and it's not just 0x, right? This happens a lot, and it's happening with Maker with the stability fee, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Like people look to the leaders of these projects to signal a vote. So my question, I guess, is has anybody voted no in any of these on-chain governance votes and like gone against the founders for what they're trying to push? And again, it's nothing against like the founder. Like I agree that this should go through, but it's just a weak excuse for a token. I mean, it's just, and we've got tragedy of the commons happening. No one's showing up to vote. Like we've said our piece, I guess, on the ZRX token at this point. And I think ZRX is, you know, it's an amazing project and they have some cool ideas coming up, I think, of, you know, how to push it forward. And we saw that with the V2 launch. It's just that, unfortunately, the reality of the situation is these governance tokens just haven't proved their worth. And like you said, a lot of people are just speculating on them. And I truly believe a lot of people that own and trade ZRX think they're like actually buying a piece of 0x, and that just simply isn't the case.
Yeah, the voter participation, as I said, you know, 1%. It's funny because that lines up with how many people voted no. 1% of people voted no. So, as you said, why would anyone vote no against this? Obviously, that was some troll. But it's interesting that you bring up the comment that Panek made about building stuff worth governing. So, as I said before, the Maker turnout is, you know, something like 10% or a bit higher than that. I think that's primarily because it's actually worth governing a lot more than something like this. So this is obviously just a trial on 0x where voting for this isn't make or break. But with Maker, they actually vote on things like the stability fee increase, which we're actually going to go into a bit later. So I think that's a lot more important to vote on and to manage than something like 0x adding a feature. So yeah, as Panek said, we've got to build these systems that are worth governing. And I think that's why we actually see participation on some blockchains. I know that, you know, something like Decred has higher participation in on-chain governance. That's because a lot of people care about the base system. And, you know, there's a bunch of different things. And now I'm not an expert on Decred, but it's got an interesting system there. So I don't think on-chain governance can't work 100%, but there needs to be a lot of different mechanisms in place to make it work. And we're just nowhere near that yet. It is very dangerous to have on-chain governance, in my opinion, like on platforms this early on in the game. Like, of course, these things are going to be experimental for a while. You know, Bitcoin's still an experiment. Like, all of this is experimental, but I don't think I wouldn't want to see, like I put out a tweet a while ago, I said there were three things I didn't want to see ever happen on Ethereum. One of those was on-chain governance. And I hope that Ethereum never has on-chain governance because I don't think that it should ever experiment with something like that. But I'm still curious to watch how other chains go. So, you know, we've got Tezos out there, Decred, EOS, which is just a disaster. So, you know, and we've got Polkadot launching as well, which is another high profile on-chain governance system. And it also comes down to things like token distribution. So with these on-chain governance systems, it isn't just one person, one vote. It's one token, one vote. So if you have 10% of the tokens, you have 10% of the vote, which is ridiculous because you can think about something like, I don't know what the token distribution is in like in other networks, but I know what it's like for Polkadot. I think they kept 50% of the tokens from the ICO, then they sold another 20%. So they still have 30% of the tokens and they plan to give it out to various people. But it doesn't matter because as we've seen so far, the participation rate is never 100%. It's nowhere near that. It's very low. So if the big players, the ones who have just 10% of the tokens, you know, are always voting because they've got a lot of tokens, they're actually more incentivized to vote, they're just going to control the chain. So it becomes a plutocracy at the end of the day. So yeah, experiments are good, but I'd never want to see the on-chain governance on Ethereum. I hope, you know, 0x becomes a protocol worth governing in the future and their governance actually means something. But I think we're way too early. This sort of stuff is probably not going to be worked out for I'd say 10 years plus in terms of having a working, effective on-chain governance system.
Yeah. I mean, in all honesty, I think it's better to just be honest. Let's just be honest. 0x was a fundraising token, right? With governance is an excuse. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? Like 0x has given us a lot of good things, and now they have runway for the next, 5-10 years or whatever it might be. Let's not kid ourselves that this is some necessary thing in all of these different projects that have governance tokens. And, I agree someday maybe we'll get there, but I think it's way too soon. It's definitely way too soon to sell this as a feature at the base layer, right? I think that's very dangerous. And like you mentioned, especially when it's a one coin, one vote, you're just going to run into plutocracy. And, especially in like Polkadot's case, you mentioned if they own 30% of tokens, and that's very similar to EOS, a very small amount of people own a lot of the tokens. The votes are over before they even begin. And then you run into tragedy of the commons, and it just becomes a complete disaster.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that 0x is a fundraising token. I think that goes for a lot of different tokens, for a lot of projects. There are very few tokens that actually have a reason to exist. I like to refer to 2017 as a kind of, misallocation of capital, but also a tax on greed. So we obviously saw a lot of greed around ICOs especially. So a lot of teams were able to raise a lot of money for complete dirt. But at the end of the day, we do have a lot of good that's kind of popped out of that as well. So the tax has actually been put to good use. So 0x has produced a lot of value, a lot of other high profile ICOs as well. But there were so much, so many ICOs that raised so much money that just did nothing. They ran away, or they, we saw things like, I can't remember the name of it now. It was some weed coin or something. This SEC went after them and said, you got to pay everyone back, blah, blah, blah. There's just so much disasters that happened during 2017 and even 2018 with regards to ICOs. People shoehorning tokens in and saying, oh, we're a utility token. You have to use our token to use our platform. What the? We've seen this already play out with like something like Bancor and Uniswap. No one's going to use your token. Like Uniswap basically defeated Bancor without a token in like 3 months or something. It's ridiculous. Like, and Bancor was one of the highest profile ICOs. They raised like $100 million or something, or more than that, $150 million, which is ridiculous. Like, anyway, I've said my piece on that. But I'm hoping that going forward, we see a lot less tokens issued for really cool projects. But in a bull market, all bets are off. Like, I fully expect this stuff to repeat itself, or for 2017 to repeat itself, basically. Sweet. Now, I want to talk about one last thing in projects before I move on to on-chain activity. So, really cool tool launched this week from our friends at Concourse. Scott Lewis, we had him on the podcast a while back discussing Settle Finance. So he also runs the Concourse Open community with a few other people. They released this really cool tool called DeFi Pulse. So it's a website that basically gives you a snapshot of all the value locked in various DeFi apps. So we've seen this, Eric and I have tweeted about this a lot. We've discussed this a lot. We've included it in the newsletter, basically. Mike McDonald created a really cool GitHub site where he tracked all the amount of ETH and tokens and stuff locked in various DeFi apps like MakerDAO and Compound and Uniswap and things like that. DeFi Pulse has actually just taken this idea, created a beautiful website around it, and just made it really easy for anyone to go on there and see it. I was talking to Scott just today, actually, and he was saying that, the site's been going really well, blew up a lot more than they expected. They've been getting a lot of great feedback about it. And I just really like to see these kind of tools become refined, basically. Like Mike McDonald has done great work with his GitHub site. There's a lot of other analytics tools out there, but they are rough for everyday users. They are, they're just showing you the data as like an engineer would see it, and the way they care about seeing it. It's not beautified or anything. And we talk about UI UX a lot. And this is what DeFi Pulse has done. They've created this beautiful website, great UI, great user experience. It's pretty simple at the moment, but they plan to add a lot of other features to it. But this is what we need. We need this sort of stuff to promote DeFi to people that may not understand it. And it's funny, it doesn't just have Ethereum stuff either. It has the Lightning Network on there too, which, I know it's your favorite topic, the Lightning Network, Eric, but yeah, it's just really cool to see that more of these user-friendly tools come out, basically.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I guess first, the only thing I love more than on-chain governance is Lightning Network, but we'll save that for another day. DeFi Pulse is sweet. I've been waiting for this to come out. Like you said, there's been a couple different tools that you could kind of piece this together, mainly Mike McDonald's tool. He puts out a lot of good tools, actually, because he builds a lot of stuff around Maker. But this is cool. To me, this is going to become like the coin market cap for Ethereum, because what really matters on Ethereum is how much capital is locked up in all these applications. daily active users and like transactions per day don't really make sense when you're talking about financial applications. What matters is how much capital is locked up, right? Because especially I personally think one of the narratives of the next bull run for Ethereum is going to be how much is locked up from open finance and eventually from staking. And that's going to start shrinking the supply as well. So this is cool. I mean, Concourse team and Scott are crushing it. It was fun to have him on the podcast. I heard that they're going to be hopefully launching I hope I'm not blowing up their spot here, but some data and like historical data and graphs too. So you're going to be able to see kind of how over time, the evolution of what's locked up in every app and then overall is going to go. So Scott, sorry if I just spoiled your thing, but at least you got some free publicity for it.
Yeah, definitely. Like, yeah, for anyone who's not following Scott or Settle Finance, Scott Lewis on Twitter and Settle Finance, go follow them. Play around with Settle Finance as well and go listen to the podcast, of course. You know, really great guys, really great team. Looking forward to seeing what other features they add to DeFi Pulse, basically. Cool. So as we announced last week, we were going to experiment with a new section. We've actually moved it up from the end of the podcast to just before we talk about on-chain activity. This was basically the dog fooding section where we talk about apps that we've used in the Ethereum space. And I know over the past couple of weeks, Eric, you've been working with the team on the Connects Network team on DAI Card, which is a wallet based on state channels and that is similar to Burner Wallet in a way. It's different in that it uses state channels instead of a different, bridge network to Ethereum. So if you wanted to run us through that, it'd be cool.
Yeah, for sure. So I tweeted out, this is basically Ethereum, in my opinion, Ethereum's answer to the Lightning Network. So it's being done by the Connects team, really solid team. I've been talking with them a lot over the last few weeks, but everyone's very familiar, I think, at this point with the Burner Wallet, which basically allows you to transact in DAI essentially feeless and instant using a POA sidechain. The biggest difference here so it's going to be at DaiCard.io and you can go mess around with it now on the Rinkeby testnet and I believe they'll be hitting mainnet here in the next couple of days. But what's really cool is you don't have to do the conversion from DAI to XDAI. So, and also they automatically convert or collateralize ETH into DAI for you. So you just send ETH into your wallet in the channel and then you have DAI and you can transact feeless, well, micro fee, but essentially to the user feeless and instant inside of this payment channel. And this is a lot what the Lightning Network's been trying to do. And this is going to be launching live on the mainnet in the next couple of days. So if anybody's interested in checking it out, just go to DaiCard.io. And if you need some funds, reach out to us on Twitter.
Yeah, it's just another app in the DeFi arsenal, basically. And payments is extremely important. We've seen how popular payment networks can be. Cryptocurrency's first use case was payments at the end of the day. And that's kind of taken a back seat to a lot of other uses like, store of value and, of course, speculation and things like that. But there are still people developing tools for this. And I think they're very important tools. I don't think people don't want to spend their crypto, but they want to spend something stable. People don't want to spend a depreciating asset like Ether or Bitcoin or something. They're happy to spend something like DAI that's pegged to the US dollar. Mentally, it works better as well. There is opportunity cost, of course, if you trade your ETH for DAI, and then of course you've got the opportunity cost of not holding the ETH and the ETH appreciated, blah blah blah. But it's still mentally better for people to, and it's especially good for new users for just using US dollars instead of Ether and having to keep track of, the price of Ether and the decimal points and all that kind of stuff. This is just great for usability. And I'm glad to see kind of a marriage between two core projects like MakerDAI and, Connects Network's DAI Card and an evolution of Burner Wallet, basically. So I know Austin Griffith's been helping these guys as well, testing it and things like that. And, I hope they actually join forces and work together on something that can benefit everyone. I do think the XDAI Burner Wallet is still really cool and serves its own purpose, of course, of acting as a Burner Wallet at the end of the day. I think they do serve two separate kind of niches there and separate use cases, but it's just good to see more people focusing on this problem because I don't think it's been given enough attention on Ethereum. It has obviously been given a lot of attention on Bitcoin, but as we know, the Lightning Network has a host of issues with it. Those issues stemming from the fact that Bitcoin is quite limited at its base layer, so you can't actually do much and you have to have a bunch of workarounds. Ethereum isn't limited in that way. Of course, we can do a lot more, and that's why these solutions are easy to spin up and for us to play around with pretty quickly. Like Dicard came out of nowhere, basically. I'm not sure how long the team was working on it, but it didn't seem to be very long from what I heard about it from you, Eric.
Yeah, no, they're an extremely solid team, and also I'll plug them. They're on Gitcoin Grants, so first of all, go check out dicard.io and play around with it, and I guarantee you're going to get excited about it because it's instant and feeless DAI transactions. How could you not be? And then go throw them some money on Gitcoin Grants because they're an impressive team, and I think they're going to be pretty vital to the future of Layer 2 solutions on Ethereum.
Yep, totally agree. Definitely go do that, people. We need more funding in the ecosystem. Cool. So speaking of Maker and DAI and all of that good stuff, I think the vote's happening right now. The Maker token holders will vote to increase the stability fee from 0.5%. They'll actually be voting to raise in increments of 2% the stability fee instead of, I think it was 0.5% at the moment or something, and then voting to raise the stability fee to 3.5%. So for people that don't know, the stability fee is the fee that gets paid back to CDPs when people take out CDPs and take out DAI and all that good stuff. They pay fees. Now, the reason that the stability fee is being raised is because at the moment, there isn't enough demand for DAI. So we've seen a lot of DAI be minted over the past few weeks. So when the stability fee was lowered to 0.5%, a lot more DAI got minted. I think it was like 15 or 20 million extra DAI was minted in the last few weeks, which is quite a bump on the total supply, considering that the supply was is capped at 100 million. So that's, and it's currently at about 90 million. So we're approaching the cap. There's not enough DAI demand. And as a result, the DAI is losing its peg. So it has consistently, over the past couple of weeks, oscillated between, I think, 98 to 96 cents. So this obviously shows that there's not enough demand for DAI. There's too much DAI circulating, not enough demand. So we need to raise the stability fee to get people to pay back their their loans, their or close out their CDPs, basically, burn their DAI, so to reduce the DAI supply. Now, as we were discussing before about on-chain governance and all this stuff, this is actually a very important vote because if they don't do this and if this doesn't pass, I have a feeling the Maker Foundation will just step in and do it anyway because it's very dangerous for it not to pass. And there is a ceiling, of course, which is actually another stopgap, and there is a bunch of other mechanisms in place, but this really does need to pass. And as you were saying before, creating something worth governing, this is definitely worth governing. So I'm going to keeping an eye on this vote and seeing the total voter turnout. I expect it to actually be higher than 10%, and I expect people to actually vote no on this as well, considering that it's quite a large bump in stability fee, which means that people will be paying more fees, of course, for their CDPs. So it'd be very interesting to see how this vote goes.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a really interesting point here. So my theory has always been that this is like pseudo decentralized when it comes to governance right now on these different Ethereum applications. I mean, I feel like people would just normally blindly follow kind of the leader. So in this case, it would be like the Maker team, right? What's interesting here, like you said, is, you know, a lot of Maker holders maybe even have CDPs open. They don't want to start paying higher fees. So maybe it would break here. I have no clue actually where the voting stands now. I haven't checked it, but you really have to start questioning the governance if the Maker team steps in at the end and says, we're going to do it anyways. If the voting doesn't go through, like, what's the point of the voting then? But yeah, this is interesting. I mean, the peg's broken a little bit on the DAI USDC exchange. I think I saw it down like near 0.97 or something like that, which means people are favoring, you know, getting out on USDC on Coinbase. But we're also getting up to the ceiling. So we talked of like a week ago, you know, I think some people maybe are just minting DAI because they know the ceiling is going to be hit. So there's maybe an oversupply. There's a lot of weird kind of things happening here. Maybe people are just kind of minting because they want to have some before the ceiling hits. And, you know, then we're having to react with raising the fee. And so it'll be interesting to watch this play out.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and speaking of Maker, I did want to just give a quick shout out to our good friend Cyrus Unisi. He actually got a job at Maker as the head of risk. So he's actually handling all of this stuff and, you know, all the decentralized governance and the risk around these sorts of things. So he's got a very big job ahead of him, I think. But I couldn't think of anyone better to be at the helm of this sort of stuff. So definitely congratulations to him. If you're not following him, go follow him on Twitter, CUNESI, or just type his name, obviously, into Twitter, Cyrus Unisi. We've spoken about his blog post before. He did a post on, you know, Maker, a couple of posts on Maker, I think, and definitely on Uniswap as well. So yeah, I just wanted to quickly plug him there. Cool. So the last thing I want to talk about was an interesting tweet that was put out this week by Dharma. So Dharma has been really busy over the past couple of weeks, especially because they launched Dharma Lever, which was their kind of core platform where you could borrow and lend your crypto assets out. So they put a Twitter thread out this week, and I know you're going to love this, Eric, and another thing you love, but they basically said and tagged a bunch of people in their tweet thread saying, it would be DopeFi if, and then you would obviously fill in the blank here. So there was a lot of interesting ideas put forward. I definitely liked one that was put forward by Brian Flynn. So Brian Flynn is, he has a newsletter called Nifty Weekly, which covers all the kind of NFT crypto related gaming developments happening. But he basically put forward it would be DopeFi if Pac-Man was reskinned. So the create CDP function would insert a quarter, you'd click start game, and that would generate DAI, where DAI would be dots. And if the player collects less than 150% of the dots or DAI, the die is left over for the next player who is queued up to play. So this basically becomes a giant pool of die, and whoever, you know, wins the game wins the die. So I thought this was just really awesome. This is just, I don't know how people think of this stuff. It's just cool. Like, it was actually DopeFi. I'm going to keep saying that. I know how much you hate it, but this was DopeFi. But there are a bunch of other things in there as well. So yeah, what did you think of this one, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, the throw was awesome. And of course, we love Dharma and they're doing a lot of good things. So it's cool to kind of see them get the thread going. Yeah, I don't know. People are creative, man. I sat there and I was like, what can I think of? And everything was super lame. So I didn't participate. And then I poo-pooed the hashtag because I think everybody knows at this point. Like, can we please not make DopeFi happen? Like, this space is already so confusing. Are we really going to start explaining open finance to people as DopeFi? Like, we're just going to come off as dopes, I guess I'll just say. And I know a lot of people are going to hate me for that, especially Amin. I think him and I are starting some GIF battles on DopeFi versus open finance at this point on Twitter. But yeah, I mean, there's so many like endless cool things you can do. It was cool to see Dharma put out this thought experiment. And to be honest, they're probably taking a lot of these ideas and seeing which ones they can try to hack up themselves.
Yeah, I think it definitely is like kind of market research, if you will. But it's good because it gets the community talking, and you know, we need these ideas fleshed out. You know, without this thread, we wouldn't have seen that really cool idea by Brian. There's a bunch of other cool ideas in there. I think CRN, who you mentioned before, put out one about DAI payroll, kind of things like that. There's just so many different things that we can do with DopeFi. And it's funny, you were talking about the terminology there between DeFi, open finance, DopeFi, whatever, like all the other terminology that we've made up in the blockchain crypto space at the moment. And it's funny because I always think about what people used to call the internet, the, you know, information superhighway and other things. And like naming, you know, names are just really weird and they take a while to land. So, I don't think we landed on calling it the internet for a while, and that kind of spread out and became its own thing. And obviously, we've settled on the internet now. But I'm wondering what we're going to settle on for DeFi, open finance, DopeFi, or just for finance in general. And I think the end goal or the end result will just be calling it finance, because we're expecting these technology and these things to completely usurp the financial system far into the future. So I think we're just going to settle on finance eventually. But in the interim, we're going to keep having these names that we oscillate or, you know, coalesce between DeFi, whatever it is. OpenFi. There's so many. Like, I think I put out a poll a few weeks ago and people were just putting all these random names in. I was just like, guys, come on. There's too much. Like, just stick to one.
Yeah, a DC investor tweeted, he said eventually in 10 years, it's just going to be finance. So hopefully, right, that's the end goal. And I fully agree with that. And by the way, I swear I'm not this much of a Scrooge. I just like things that work. Like I don't like on-chain governance because it doesn't work. I don't like Lightning Network because it doesn't work. I don't like DeFi or DopeFi because I think open finance works. Like I just don't like throwing wrenches into things. So I just want to be clear. Like I can have some fun. I'm just not a fan of DeFi.
This feels like this podcast has just been a list of things you hate.
Well, Lightning Network, that's very out there in the open. I pretty much get death threats for that at this point, but hopefully I don't start getting those for DeFi.
Yeah, I don't think that you're subtle in your Lightning Network dislike, if I you know, if I will, especially on Twitter. But, you know, it's always good to be the contrarian or to question certain things, to be critical of things. I don't think that's a bad trait to have. You know, there's a balance to it as well. There are some people who just go way overboard and become really negative and salty about everything, which isn't the way to go. But I definitely think that constructive criticism is the way to go, especially in this space where we see so much unnecessary positivity and dangerous positivity, if you will. That is actually a thing. I know it's a bit hard to reconcile, but that is actually a thing, because if we're trying to do things that the, you know, mainstream people are completely not ready for and that actually might be dangerous for people, we shouldn't be doing those things, of course. I think a major thing is in 2017, we saw a lot of this stuff happen where people got burned from investing in things they had no idea about. That might not have been a fault of any particular person or group, but a fault as a collective of people or as a community that we didn't do enough to temper certain things. But I don't think there's any controlling the beast of the market at the end of the day, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with all that. I mean, I think at a point, hopium becomes toxic, right? You don't want to be, you know, just believe everything is going to revolutionize the world. We need to be realistic about this stuff at times. And on top of that, it's realistically going to take years for this stuff to be fully adopted. So that's just, I always like to play that bit of contrarian just to kind of, you know, I'm not out here to sell hopes and dreams to people. Let's be realistic.
Yeah, I think we'll be in our like 60s by the time this becomes mainstream. We'll be on the podcast with our croaky old voices saying, "Oh, Eric, do you remember the time when that app barely worked?"
Hey, man, if we're still sitting here talking about this at 60, that means we're doing pretty well for ourselves, probably. So I'll take that.
Yeah, probably in our like 30th bear market of crypto. And we're just, instead of like we're physically 60, but mentally we're like 200 or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So cool. All right, well, that's it for the newsletter this week. Thank you everyone again for tuning in. Thanks for lasting till the end. This is actually a bit of a long one this week. As usual, if you haven't subscribed to the newsletter, go to ethub.substack.com and you can subscribe there and check out the newsletter from the past week of what we discussed on the podcast today. Definitely go subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already at podcast.ethub.io, and follow us both on Twitter if you like shitposting. Yay. Thanks everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast. You can subscribe to us at podcast.ethub.io, as well as follow us on Twitter at econoar and at zazzle0x.